Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Excited about the Middle East coming up. God, it's gonna be so hot.
There's so many things to look forward to in the middle of winter.
It's so dope. I'm going with some of the best people that I like, and I'm fucking pumped about it. You know what else I'm pumped about, guys? I am pumped about Quality Time tonight.
Yay!
Oh shit, dude. Yeah, we're back.
Both quality.
It's gonna
time.
Be another fresh episode.
Another fresh episode.
What?
Fresh off the streets. Right now I'm in the Middle East. I'm in the Middle East right now. Does it feel like I'm in the Middle East? I don't know.
It feels
know.
Like I'm jealous that you're getting a suntan.
Yeah, I'm getting suntan. I'm getting bit by scorpions.
Yeah.
I have so much malaria. You don't even know. I'm riddled with malaria.
Which scorpion do you feel like you're being bit by?
The wind of change scorpion. That's
Or the rock.
You should say
in the scorpion
like
Rudolph
Schenker is the scorpion I want to get bit by.
What the fuck is Rudolph Schenker?
Rudolph Schenker from the Scorpions.
Oh, okay, got it, yeah.
Now I was thinking that if you had like a really, really black high school in Columbia, that, you know, maybe they would have like a football team named after the Scorpions, the band.
I got it. Yes, so. That's my high school. I went to Oakland Mills High School. Thank you.
Home of Aaron
Thank
Magruder.
You. That's where I went. And that voice you hear to my right tonight is none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy Woodworth.
Hey!
How are you?
No, that's not me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who are we joined with tonight?
I'm back from the grave. It's Charlie Manson.
Charlie Manson.
I just made a spider out of my hair, and I've been taking over Jeremy for weeks after I've been dead.
I feel like I've had this dream the other night where I legitimately thought that like George W. Bush swapped places with Charlie Manson.
I'm Whoa. Charlie Manson Bush.
And they never missed a beat. Like they were just like, I'm Charlie. Oh, this is really great. I'm in prison right now. I'm ready to get some pussy. Hey, you like this little swastika I drew on my head? This is pretty nice. All
I
right.
just pictured Charles Manson reading that children's book when they told him about 9/11, but he just had a Charles Manson face like, oh my God.
And that other sultry voice you hear is the lady to my left, out of order introduction, Miss Kimberly
Yay!
Ambrose.
Hey,
Kimmy, how you doing, boob doll?
I'm sick.
Oh, you're sick. Oh my gosh.
All day, every day.
Why? Well, Kimberly, why are you sick?
Because I'm pregnant.
Oh my Yay! Gosh, revelations!
Revelations!
Oh, stop, I felt it boiling.
Oh my gosh.
She has her special candy to eat to keep her from vomiting.
Keeps me from throwing up.
So dude, you're now you're pod official with the pregnancy. How does it feel? How do you, where are you at? Where's your head at with this?
I'm sleepy and I did a couple jokes at Autobar in January about I said I'm pregnant and let it out the bag, and I was like I'm sick as a dog right now and I'm super tired. I'm very weak and I have brain farts like it's my business. I'm just really excited about the fun part of pregnancy when everybody tells you their fucking opinion.
Yeah, constantly.
I'm pumped about that.
Are you eating lots of pickles and ice cream?
No.
Any weird desires?
The
that you
first
want?
Thing I wanted before it was official, before I took a test, was watermelon.
Mm.
And when I ate it, it was like my whole world came together. I was like, this is what I've been searching for. This is weird. I can't handle dairy, but I will destroy macaroni and cheese right now.
Ooh, mac and cheese.
Also,
you
popsicles.
Somehow, you got pregnant and became whiter somehow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I just love mayonnaise and voting.
How can you say she became whiter and liked watermelon? I'm sorry. I love white people love watermelon. Sorry.
That is not her. That's the black child within her. spoiler alert, Brian. Anyway, but congratulations.
Thank
I'm super
you.
Excited. Oh my gosh.
Thank
yeah.
you.
I've had to hold this in for weeks
I
on
know.
The podcast.
You did so
and
good.
Now, and now it's here, and I'm fucking stoked as hell.
How long before the second trimester?
Another like 4 weeks, 5 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, you're 9, 10 weeks in? Right,
I just passed 8 weeks and I'll be 9 weeks this week. Not when this comes out.
So you're at 11 weeks now. You're at 11
when
weeks.
This comes out? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's almost over then. Ah!
Podcast time, second trimester.
Here's my first bit. Okay. I want to get above the curve with you, okay?
Please.
I'd like to be the first to give you unmerited advice.
Thank you.
Okay?
That's super cool.
That's the most important part.
Okay.
Let me do you a favor. This is something that you can skip, okay? Because, like, you know, when you go places, you go to Disneyland and they offer you the scopes.
Yes.
And you, at the time, it seems like a good idea. Get the scopes because it's going to be dope. Don't get the scopes.
Don't get the scopes.
When you go to get that ultrasound and they offer you the 3D picture of your child.
Yeah.
Don't get that bitch.
Yeah.
Because it looks literally like what the girl from The Ring looks like, but bald and very gray and frightening. It is a fucking nightmare to see the 3D image of your child. Don't put it on the fridge. You if you want to lose weight, put it on the fridge because you won't eat it.
We get it. You're made of vapor.
Oh, it's so gross. Don't spring
actually
for
him. We're working with a midwife that I've known for a long time from working as a birth doula. And she's super cool. She's super awesome. And they don't really suggest we do ultrasounds until like after 12 weeks because ultrasounds use sound waves, which to a baby, because it's in fluid, is a lot like tapping on the glass of a fish tank. It's like boof. That's why you always see the baby's hands are up in the picture because they're bothered.
Well, how are you supposed to determine if it's going to be a delicious baby?
So we'll wait. We'll wait a while and then,
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are you going to find out the sex of the baby? I mean, you have some opinions of what you think the baby is. And you got to trust that, the mother's thing on that.
I mean, you never know.
Are you going to find out? Is it going to be a secret? Are you going to real metal reveal?
My anxiety, I need to know. Like, I can't, like, I couldn't go 9 months and be like, gee, how do we not prepare for the rest of this thing's life? You know what I mean? Like, I have no problem. In fact, my daughter will receive Tonka trucks and my son would receive dolls. I don't think there's any reason to hold it's just dumb to assume that every child likes the same things, you know?
Yeah, watch some David Bowie videos.
But at the same time, I've been invited to baby showers.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get your child to be only Prince and David Bowie figures. So just real androgynous so that, let them decide.
Well, it's so annoying, like, when you go to buy, like, gifts for someone and you can only get, like, yellow and purple. You know, like, God damn it, just tell me what the fuck it is.
Yeah. By the way, there's a bunch of, I have whatever baby shit I have left. It's all yours.
I've
already taken buckets of it away. But I'm sure there's clothes and onesies and shit that we couldn't get rid of that you can totally have. Because no matter boy or girl, a fucking shit-riddled onesie with stains all over it, you'll think it's gross now. You'll be happy that there's a clean thing you can just throw on this fucker right now.
I think I was wearing my friend's mom's jeans in high school, and they were my favorite jeans.
Ooh, there you go.
I'm down with hand-me-downs. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, good times.
I'm really happy for you, Kim. And the fact that you're doing it earlier in life is actually better for any kid. So
yeah, I talked to a woman who said that in New York, who said that the average age of first-time mothers is now 26. Which is interesting because it used to be way younger.
Yeah, it used to be like 18 to like 22.
Yeah, yeah. When my parents had me, they were 23 and I was their first. Yeah, young.
I think I was, 26? I was 27.
Okay, that's 27. Prime age. That's a good age.
And then I did the sequel in 3 years later.
Okay.
And I'm perfectly fine and never tired. I couldn't be better right now raising two little women that are going to rip my soul apart every day.
Can't wait. So excited.
Have you ever seen Justin Schlegel's video that he put online of him just following his kids around with the middle finger like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
Sounds about right.
Funny.
I love to hear him complain about money, how he doesn't have money because he gives it to his family and kids and all. So...
I just look forward to a lifetime of like ruining like things that I'm going to say in the heat of the moment that'll ruin my children's lives for their forever.
I heard a story forever. About Homeward Bound tonight.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think I told this on the pod before, but I watched Homeward Bound with my daughter Jane, who is 6 years old, and we were watching Homeward Bound, and we got to the part where Shadow falls into the this big dirt pit, and he's the old dog, and he's stuck at the bottom of this mud pit. And Chance, played by Michael J. Fox, is trying to convince Shadow that he needs to get up and get out. Come on, you can do it. And he goes, I can't do it. I'm just too old. Oh. And then they switch to the scenes like after that, like implying that Shadow's just stuck at the bottom of that thing. And then my daughter started to go, Daddy, I'm getting really sad right now. I was like, why is that, too, sweetheart? And he's like, because Shadow's down in there and I don't think he's going to get out. And I was just like, that's because he doesn't get out, honey. And part of me...
Let's just turn the movie off right now. Part of me said,
just end the movie right now and open up this gaping wound that'll make our actual dog's death a little easier. And then I had to convince her to watch the rest of the movie because both of the cat and Chance show up, but Shadow's not there and she's whistling for him. And then Shadow shows up and does not. And then she's like, yay, Shadow's alive.
You're
only
like,
to die exactly a year later after the filming was over.
That's not how life works, honey. Yes. But you enjoy this fucking fantasy while you eat your goddamn lollipop.
So, that's one of the scarring moments that I've impugned on my daughter.
One of
many more to come. And another scarring moment that we're going to go over tonight is 1987's Bad Taste.
Oh boy.
Ooh.
Is this 1987 two in a row? The Cherry was
last week's episode was 1987's Cherry, and this week is 1987's Bad Taste. But the difference between Cherry and Bad Taste is this is actually directed by an Academy Award winning director, and that's Sir Peter Jackson.
Whoa.
Sir.
Has he been knighted?
I don't know. Do they have knights in New Zealand?
New Zealand, yes.
I'm a New Zealand knight, actually.
Him and Lucy Lawless will be the sirs.
Actually, all you get as a New Zealand knight is just an all black t-shirt that they just put on you like this.
And a hoagie.
And a kick to the butt.
He's a hoagie, and here's one of the New Zealand All Blacks to present your knighthood t-shirt. Hope you enjoy it.
We got you this better knife than the knife you have.
Did you say the rugby team was the All Blacks?
Yes. They are.
Rugby team matters.
They do.
If you're a fan of steel balls where the black militant, every time he hears anything that's in... close to black, he's like, all blacks? All blacks? So it's a great show. Steel Balls.
So this movie, Bad Taste, was actually filmed over on weekends over a 4-year period.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Peter Jackson wrote and produced this film, and he just started filming it just on the weekends with his buddies. That's how it all started. He just brought them out, and every weekend that they were available, they would film this movie. And there was no actual script written. He would just film one scene, and then by the next weekend he would write the new script about where it went from there. It was kind of like a choose your own adventure movie.
I feel like you guys decided, let's take Kim's pregnancy as a challenge and see what we can do to make her throw up at home when she doesn't want to.
Did we succeed? Did you throw up watching this movie?
I stopped watching it because I was like, I'm done. You want to know the part I stopped watching it?
Is the part where he tries to put his brains back in?
No.
Oh, okay.
When I almost backed out when the one alien, which they're totally zombies and I don't know why all their shirts match, but when the one alien was eating the other alien's brains from the earlier scene, I was like, you might lose me here.
This is a big part.
But I was playing solitaire on my phone, I held it together. And then we got to the part where they made the one alien throw up in a bowl, and it looked just like the green shit in Troll 2. And I was like, okay, I've been here before. We've been on this adventure. But then the high priest of the alien cult
drank it, and I was like, I'm done.
All right,
this I'm is done. It. This is That's me it. Out. I'm not. All done. I'm not I'm dealing with this here. Anymore.
I'm all done here. So
it's not like I missed out on plot.
No. You didn't miss out on not a whole lot of plot. But the one thing that we'll give this movie is you really do get to see the wonder and the talent of a very, very young, very, very green Peter Jackson. I mean, because he basically made this whole movie all by himself. I mean, he produced it. He made all the special effects for the movie. He made all of those fucking weird alien masks in his mom's oven that he had to fold in half because they wouldn't fit in otherwise, which is why there's like, when you look at the molds for it, like the forehead has this big giant fold in it. It's just because it wouldn't fit in the oven. So like, to harden the latex, he had to fold it a little bit, and that's why their heads are shaped like
more
that.
More important is all the gunfire. Is that when he's actually pretending to gunfire, and it's actually flashes on screen that are put on, that it's not actual real guns.
Oh, wow.
No, actually, none of the guns are real or replicas in the movie. They're actually just stuff he got from Home Depot to make look it. So he made all of those guns.
That is impressive.
None of them are real at all.
I realized something about America during this movie, and, you know, he had what appeared to be a Tech 9. And he was shooting it, and it sounded very realistic, and it looked realistic. And but this is a guy from New Zealand, and he's got like, he keeps like pursing his mouth too hard, and like he's got super nerd face and like curly hair, glasses, bad teeth. He says really dumb lines, and I was thinking to myself, like, you know, other cultures don't have as much gun violence per capita as America. We well overrank people. Yes. It's kind of absurd how high our numbers
are. We're number one.
Yeah.
We're number
one. And I realized why when I was watching this movie. Because we just fucking look cool doing it.
Literally, this is Rambo as a super nerd and mixed with some Monty Python. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of influences of it. And but you do see the talent of, like, just the cinematography, the general direction of it. The acting is shit because it's just his friends. The use of the scenery, a lot of the pans. I mean, he does a pretty good job on a very shoestring budget. He actually did so well that he funded this whole movie himself up to, like, near the end.
Oh, wow.
And then everything that he had shot, he brought to the New Zealand Film Board, and he showed him. He's like, hey, this is what I made. I want to make the end of this movie. And they actually gave him like state funding to make the rest of this movie.
So I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
The whole ending of the movie where they have a house that they blow up and it shoots it off and all that, that was all paid for by the New Zealand government.
Tell a fucking taxpayer that and see how they feel.
Listen, to me, my tax sense, that was the best thing you could have done with my tax dollars. The best thing.
The other thing is the fact that it's him as Derek and as Robert,
yes,
where he's torturing himself with a bayonet in Robert's foot,
yeah,
on the hill, and the fact that it's bearded Peter Jackson versus clean cut Robert Peter Jackson.
Yeah,
so
he really had to think about how to do this because he shot both of them because he's you know, he plays one of the main characters, Derek, and he also plays one of the main villains in the movie. And I think this is the only movie Peter Jackson is actually in too.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool. But Jeremy is correcting me
every
now.
Single Lord of the Rings.
He's in every
really?
Single Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Oh. When they first go to the prancing pony, he's in the street in the rain sitting in the first movie. I think, I don't know about the second movie, but the third movie where they're at the white, you know, the big place where they're going to fight with all the zombies and everything.
Uh-huh.
He comes in on the ship and he's the first person to get shot by Legolas or something. So he's on the ship. He gets killed then. He's also probably in the second one. I just don't remember when.
So. Oh, okay. So, but it's more like cameo roles. He doesn't have speaking roles in this movie. This is
No, he had a speaking role in Dead Alive. He was the beginning scientist in Dead Alive.
Maybe I was completely wrong. Oh. I stand Joe Robinson corrected. Okay.
There will never be a better writer, director, producer cameo role in a movie than when Quentin Tarantino said, "Does it look like dead N-word storage outside my house in Pulp Fiction?"
I don't remember who he was in The Frighteners, though. It's been a while.
I like the best Quentin Tarantino role. I do love him in Pulp Fiction. I like him better as an actor in From Dusk Till Dawn. That's just me. That's just me, though.
Let me tell you about Like a Virgin.
Yeah. I'm going to write this movie where I get to suck alcohol off of Salma Hayek's neck. I know it's crazy. I know it's crazy, George.
I'm going to Weinstein this moment.
You need to write a scene about you sucking alcohol off her feet.
All right, but let's get on with tonight's topic, Bad Taste. It opens up and there is a phone call that some dark room that gentleman from what looks, what we'll find out is the government listening to of a 911 call.
Using reel
to reel. Using reel to reel. You know, it's just like, oh yeah, everybody's dead out here. It looks really dangerous. Oh my gosh, blah, blah, blah. And then they hear it and he says, it's time to call in the boys. And he picks up a phone that has a speed dial that says the boys.
With his finger attachment.
So it opens up and one of the boys who we will find out shortly is named Barry is being chased by a maniac with an axe who seems like he's a zombie or whatever. He's chasing him over
chased
there.
Chased is a lot.
Walking briskly. He's like, I'm warning you, please stop following me. Right. It just shows the friendliness of New Zealanders right away. He's just like, we are being called in as highly trained government assassins. Somebody's chasing me with an axe. Please, you need to stop this right now. It's your final warning, okay? So,
Can I go back to
1987? Yeah.
Take me.
I don't know if it was during the release of this. I was always into Fangoria and Gorzo and my favorite horror movies. Mm-hmm. They had full-size pictures in an article about bad taste, and I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta see this movie. Guy's got like an arm hanging off like a sledgehammer in the other guy's head. And I was like, oh, this is gonna be awesome.
Well, this movie is known for its high levels of fucking gore, which will only really be outdone by one other movie, which is also a Peter Jackson flick.
The Lord of the Rings.
The Lord of the Rings, yes. Dead Alive.
King Kong.
He tops himself with Dead Alive. I mean, this is... Yes. I mean, I feel like Dead Alive is the movie that is the almost sequel, the Evil Dead 1. Like, this is Evil Dead 1, and Dead Alive is Evil Dead 2. It's kind of the same movie, but this one has a little bit more plot, makes a little bit more sense, and is somehow even funnier.
Just the picture alone of the first guy that gets his head blown off. Just seeing that in the magazine's like... Oh, that looks like an awesome movie. Yeah.
See, he takes out his big old fake 45 and shoots the guy's head off so that he's literally head is gone from like nose up and it's just squirting blood everywhere. There's brain matter.
And the really, really bad sound effects of.
And the body falls on his leg and like drips down like that.
He was so married to the idea that blood spurts into people's eyes and they are offended.
Yes, yes.
Every time it happened, they were like, oh.
The whole time Barry is talking to somebody on the other end of a walkie-talkie who you find out on a hilltop is actually none other than Peter Jackson himself playing Derek.
With a giant Doctor Who scarf.
Yes. And Doctor Who is mentioned a couple times in this. We'll get to those as they go along. But yeah, he's wearing like a giant scarf very, very similar to the Doctor Who. And he says, Barry, can you get me some of that brain matter? He's just like, no, mate, go get it yourself. He's just like, oh, at least get me a blood sample. He's like, maybe I'll just squeeze out my knickers, blah, 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 because he's covered in blood. Kind of funny. Okay.
You mean his Striders? Yeah. His knickers are like his underwear.
His Striders. I'm sorry.
Sorry, but again, but a spetchka.
People in New Zealand and like England, like some of their words just sounds like they never grew up.
Yeah.
Like you're a grown man, you just called your shoes Striders. Mm-hmm. Like it just, I don't know.
Striders was a big brand back in the 70s. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we didn't know that they were real shoes until
good
you just
Striders.
Mentioned that.
God, Striders. Why don't you marry it?
I thought you were talking about the 90s show what's his name? Something O'Connell. Jerry O'Connell. Sliders. Yeah.
Well, that was a good one. Striders are second only to ponies and Adidas in the 80s, okay? So...
You do get to hear some of the dialogue in this film in the very, very beginning there. They say, oh, there's aliens. He's like, oh, why can't aliens be nice? Hey, I'll tell you something, buddy. These aren't glowing finger nice ones. He was just like, yeah, they started with this small town. Maybe next it'll be Wellington or Auckland. Well, that wouldn't be so bad. New Zealand humor. Shitting on Auckland.
Did you read about Kai Hiro?
No.
But it's actually a play on words that it's actually another words for, I think it's African for fast food.
Oh, so, okay. And no. I didn't know
which
that.
Culminates in the end or near the end.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So as they're talking, Barry runs into five more aliens. He gets attacked by them and they're in pursuit of him. He loses his gun and his radio. In the meantime, Derek is calling Ozzy and Frank, the other boys, who are just rolling around in their fucking purple Mustang listening to fucking some dope ass metal music.
Listening to Dokken.
Is it docket?
No, it's not, but it should be.
I don't know what the music
is. If they can afford docket.
But it's pretty fucking metal. So Derek explains that he has captured one of them on the side of the hill, and it's dangling on the side, which you'll also learn is a bearded Peter Jackson. So Peter Jackson and Peter Jackson right there. Derek starts the interrogation of that of one of the aliens by because he's hanging by his foot off of a cliff. He crawls down and takes a giant knife, and he's just like, "All right, I'm gonna answer you a bunch of questions right now. And first, we'll get this started." He starts pounding the knife into his foot, like his heel, and he's like, "Now tell me why you're here." Boom, and starts jamming it right through his foot like that, which is like, wow. He goes, he's fucking going real hard for
a scientist. You
know, you're not building bridges right now, right? Like, alien life, you're just like, oh, first thing I can do, let's torture the fuck out of this thing. You know what I mean?
Can I do an imitation of the sound he makes?
Yes, yes.
Yes. Where he calls his other alien buddies.
So the alien buddies have Barry pinned down in a house, but the aliens do hear him screaming out, and they go running towards his position, which leaves Barry free, but he's gunless and radioless, and he knows they're coming after Derek, so he's running in pursuit of the aliens now. He finds his gun and gets his radio just in time, and as he uses the radio, he warns Derek that, "Derek, get out of there. They're coming right after you right now, pal. You gotta make a run for it." And he's just like, first great quotable line of this movie, "You know something, mate? Derek's don't run." Is that like a New Zealand saying that, like, Derek's don't run?
Did we mention these are like probably the four most New Zealand names of any person that you can name? Derek, Ozzy,
Frank, and Barry.
And Barry.
Barry, Frank, Ozzy.
Well, I see your name is. what are all the guys in Monty Python as Australians? They're oh, I see your name isn't Frank.
Bruce
isn't Bruce. So,
he tracks him down. Barry warns him, and then Derek pulls out a giant Uzi out of his backpack, or an MP5. I can't really tell.
Uzi.
Again,
Uzi.
Is it? You think it's an Uzi?
Very much.
Okay, so he pulls out the Uzi and then decides to do his best, like, Predator 1 scene where he guns into
just
the forest.
Firing away for no
just
reason.
Just fires blankly into the forest and not really chopping down anything. It's just like, bing, 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 bing. And then one of them shows up. He's taking out none of them. And he goes to get his second clip. He ends up getting it in just in time. And he shoots the guy so many times that he falls onto the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then he forces the gun all the way through the guy. And then shoots the other ones as they're coming up through the guy. I mean, guys, this is a cinematic first. We have never seen somebody get impaled with a gun.
Never in all my days. And it didn't jam the gun up.
Doesn't jam. You know what? That's new. That's high quality New Zealand. You know,
yeah.
Here we have very, very aquatic and very humid lifestyle. So it's really made to go through the human
new
body.
New Zealand PVC pipe is better than any PVC.
I would like to think that Paul Verhoeven, director of Total Recall, was watching this and just licking his lips. Oh my God. Gosh. Oh, if I'd only thought of that during making Total Recall on the escalator scenes, he could have shot through another guy.
Gosh, you know, it's the missed opportunities that you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take
through another man's corpse.
But meanwhile, he was thinking about more nude scenes that he could make with women as strippers. So, thank you, Paul Verhoeven.
So the another two show up now, but he's also out of bullets. So he pulls out the third clip, and so begins the most comical scene of sledgehammery you'll ever see in a movie. So first sledgehammer guy knocks the clip off of the cliff, and he's like, oh shit, I lost my clip now. What am I gonna do? So he narrowly misses like 8 sledgehammer hits, some of them where the sledgehammers perfectly hit each other instead of him, which ends up being kind of comical. He goes down to where the other alien is supposed to be hanging off the side and sees that he is gone, which is, oh, that's cool. going to bed, but his clip is right there. He, with by using his chin and face, reloads the gun and then shoots the one who then takes the sledgehammer and then flings it over the back and then embeds it in the guy's head, and then he shoots the fucking arm off the other one so that the arm detaches with the sledge in the guy. It's fucking awesome.
No,
it's pretty fucking
no
cool.
Conservation for bullets at all.
Not at all.
In a scene and a half where he is really worried about having a gun available.
Yeah, yeah. So,
And the setup as a director, how do you get a scene where you get a sledgehammer in one guy's head with an arm still attached? You know, you got to write that out perfect.
Yeah, it's not like this was just thrown together at the last minute, and this was clearly thought of days in advance.
At least days in
advance.
4 years
in the making. Steve hitting it. We gonna get into the big old podcast. Long time tonight, baby.
I thought you guys were gonna talk longer. So,
you thought we brought content?
I thought you guys were gonna bring the fire right there. I was like, this is gonna be it.
That was
my
mistake.
Shot.
That was a mistake.
I could have kept it going.
Derek then sees that the last one is now the one that was freed, which is also Peter Jackson, is free, and then ends up scuffling with him and throwing Derek off the side of the cliff in pretty fucking awesome fashion. The dummy like tumbles the whole way down and then splats on a rock and then blood shoots out, and it's actually a pretty good scene, because I watched it at first and I was just like, those legs aren't really moving that much. Maybe, I mean, is this a stunt? I had to watch it once and to realize it was really a dummy. I was like, all right, it had to be a dummy.
The splat was pretty great.
The splat was pretty good. Barry finds him there, and then seconds later he's covered with with seagulls that are just picking his flesh already. like right after he falls
it's
over.
Like they say about, like, it'll take a dog like a week or 2 weeks to start eating you, but it takes a cat like 30 minutes like after you die.
The dog's really broken up. The cat's like, all right, food's on.
Finally, this piece of shit.
We then are getting introduced to a character whose name we don't know, but he works for the Beneficial Relief and Emergency Aid Division, or Bread. He's going door to door, but he sees that, oh, look, somebody didn't take the last one I left here. Okay. And this guy runs across alien Peter Jackson, who is eating the other guy's brains, whose head was shot off in the first scene, with a spoon.
This was the first moment where I was like, I might not do this.
Oh, okay. This is a bit
we've
much.
Reached Kim's limit.
It's not worth losing the little bit of food I have kept down today.
A foot chase ensues, and he hops in his VW that, of course, has trouble starting. But then after a brief encounter with Peter Jackson getting his hand stuck in the window, he's able to drive off and then breaks down in front of a nearby house where he's met by the chef, who he thinks might be a friend, but immediately clubs him over the head and drags him in the house.
Nope.
A la Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Did you think what I thought this first time seeing the bread guy, is that he looked like Jared?
No, I didn't, but he does kind of look like our dead cousin Jared.
Yes.
It does feel kind of similar. The guy who actually plays that part, who is Craig Smith. Craig Smith is actually a friend of Peter Peter Jackson. But when they started filming this movie, he was actually cast as a lead, but he got married and his wife thought that this movie was so deplorable that they were making that he had to be taken out of a lead role. So he couldn't do all the weekends, which is why he got that smaller part. And the funny part is that over those 4 years, he got married and divorced, which is why he got back into the movie in some of the later scenes. So, you know, that's the benefit of shooting over a 4 year
period.
That's
a sign, though. If you marry a woman who says, I don't think it's a good idea for you to be in a movie where your friend who wrote this is eating the brains of another man, maybe she's not the one for you.
Well, you know,
like at the day that my wife says, I really don't want you doing like gay erotic movies anymore, how am I gonna have a career?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Bitch, I have a reputation to uphold.
You know, Pogo, that's what he does. He kills young boys and rapes them, okay?
Okay.
You made the costume.
Merry fucking Christmas. Enjoy the ham.
It's not like I'm enjoying the gay sex. It's part of my job.
Right.
So the bread guy then finds himself awakened in a giant barrel that's filled with herbs and spices, and he has an apple taped into his mouth and is now surrounded by a an array of these creatures.
Cult aliens.
You may ask yourself why you're filled in a barrel with all these great spices. That is because the Homo sapiens are going to be the greatest thing the universe has ever tasted.
Disagree.
Yeah,
disagree.
So
people
he's
are
now
gross.
They're talking about how they're going to eat him tomorrow, which is pretty exciting. Now, the actor that they had to play this gentleman was
Doug Wren.
Interesting fact, you might know that there's a kind of a weird voiceover for Doug Wren, and that's because when they finished shooting this movie, Doug actually died after this movie.
Peter Vere Jones did the voice, though, of Lord Crumb.
Yes. So Peter Vere Jones actually came in and had to do the voiceover for him, and that's only because Doug Wren died. So otherwise he
was
would
it like a
continued.
Rights issue or something?
No, it was just because when you film a movie, they probably didn't have great audio. So like when they were looking at it, like,
and they meant to.
A lot of times what they do is they'll have actors come back in and they sit in with like a microphone and you watch your scene
in
and you just
Star
try to
Wars.
Talk over it so like it matches up.
It's
like that.
It's like in Dark Knight Rises, how every scene Heath Ledger was in, he was like, "Well, I don't understand, Batman. How come we can't?" Because they had to.
Why so serious?
Yeah.
Hey, why so? So I don't know.
By the way, in Star Wars, Darth Vader was white underneath all that, but he's actually got a black voice by James Earl Jones. He's the only black in the Star Wars film.
And of course, he dies.
I actually just learned recently that I never known this, but one of those videos popped up that I never realized that Heath Ledger's Joker is really just Tom Waits, the jazz musician Tom Waits.
I woke up burning while the world's still turning. I'm Vietnam Tom and Tom Waits.
Honestly, blow your mind. Look up an interview with Tom Waits, and you're like, oh my God, that's Heath Ledger's Joker. That's exactly where he got it from.
Okay.
That's how he talks.
That's
like,
why
he
Tom Waits
best.
Movie. Tom Waits movie.
What's that?
Dracula.
8.5.
Really?
Yes, as you know, second only to Dracula.
Oh, wow, neato.
What's his
fun
name?
Fun facts.
The crazy guy.
Gary Oldman.
No, the real Dracula movie. The guy who's in the
monster.
Bela Lugosi.
What I can't remember his character's name.
Bela Lugosi.
The crazy guy. Renfield. Yes, Renfield.
Got it.
So.
Chris Redfield.
Tight.
Chris Restivo Field.
Chris Restivo Field.
James Finn!
And you think that would be weird enough, but then the butcher hands a giant knife over to Peter Jackson, and Peter Jackson proceeds to slit his own throat in front of him, and then splatters blood all over his face, which you think, oh man, Peter Jackson's dead now. Nope, that was just, you know, that was just for fun.
Yeah.
Cut my neck.
The best part is the guy in the barrel just starts chuckling because he cut his throat by accident, but of course until the blood spurts right into his glass.
Yeah. And then he is offended.
So we then see Derek, who is still on the rock and presumed dead. He springs back to life. Oh my God, Derek's alive. After he gets bird shit on his face and picked by birds, he actually wakes up and headbutts one of the seagulls off of him.
Fuck yeah, don't take that from anybody.
And then realizes that a flap of his back of his head is open and his brains have fallen out. And he's like, oh, he starts convulsing, but he slaps it shut and he's like, oh, that's better. And he picks up the brains and then opens his flap up and just kind of neatly tucks it back in there.
Because by the way, that's totally how that works. According to WebMD, that's totally how that works.
I'm just saying, Peter Jackson could have made The Wizard of Oz a lot more interesting, right? Like, I only had a brain and you actually have to just shove brains in.
Oh, wait, but I do.
Which is exactly the way Jackie Onassis thinks to maybe help put JFK back together. So I'm going to go over this trunk and maybe put things right back
I'm
together.
I'm not a doctor,
so.
But I'm pretty sure if I shove it back in there,
oh
he'll
God.
Be fine.
Oh, my God.
I hope that doesn't offend anyone. It might be a little bit too soon since the JFK assassination, but anyway.
I saw last podcast on the left live at the Kennedy Center in D.C., and it was really fucking cool because Henry Zebrowski brought up a couple of times how cool it was that a bunch of Satan-loving, Illuminati-believing people were in the Kennedy Center yelling, "Hail Satan!" And he said, the only president who's... the only president whose head has been turned into a back door. And we were all like, Jesus Christ.
Like, let's just quote the last thing that JFK ever said. You have to show the Laker girls your thingy. They need to be taken down a notch. Thank you.
So he then switches over to Ozzy, Frank, and Barry, and they're preparing for war. They're getting out all the guns, but not the big one. He says, we're not going to need that, mate. We'll save that one for later.
They're confident.
So we get a little precursor that they got a big gun that they ain't pulling out yet.
A big gun!
They also say that he's just like, oh, yeah, we're allowed to do violence as long as we're allowed to protect the planet. And then the other guy chimes in and goes, oh, the moon. Their only objectives as special agents are they're here to protect the Earth or the moon through violence, which is pretty funny. And then they also reference here, which is another Doctor Who reference. He goes, maybe they came here in a giant blue telephone box, which is another reference to Doctor who, of course, flies around in a giant blue telephone box.
Is that called the Retardus?
The Retardus.
This freaking guy.
Jimmy Merritt
here
would have your ass for that.
Sorry,
story, sir.
Sorry.
The aliens are in the house and they warn, we must stay in human form. The boys find their way to the what I call the butcher's room, which is just covered with blood all over the floor. And Barry, being the good guy that he is just like, oh my God, it's a mess in here. So he immediately
slipping
up,
all over
they're
it.
Slipping all over the blood on the floor. He's like, I'm going to clean this up. So he starts mopping the floor, and as he's mopping the floor, one of the aliens enters the room, so they have to silently kill him, which was actually pretty cool because they're like tossing things around and catching glass plates as it's happening, and then ultimately they grab his head and rip it out Sub-Zero style with the fucking like spinal cord and everything, and then he's just like, quick, he takes the head and before it hits the ground does a perfect rugby drop kick through the fucking window.
Oh my
and then
God.
It goes up to Ozzy's face. He's like, still going. Still going. Mate. Like that. Oh, it's just bravo to you. Bravo, Peter Jackson, for putting this together.
I didn't think that was such a rugby thing. It definitely was a rugby kick. So.
Yeah, well, that's a rugby drop kick. Luckily, I'm bringing in my other talent of being a aficionado and playing rugby for 16 years of my life, sacrificing my body and making my knees sound like glow sticks when I stand up. But yeah, he basically drop kicks it through the window. It's pretty impressive. So, Frank,
after not seeing that movie for at least 20, 25 years, I laughed exactly the way the first time I seen it. So,
Frank then decides to take the clothes off of the alien and pose as one of the aliens so he can go in and get some intel.
Smart.
And that's where Lord Crumb starts breaking down all the evil plot of what's going on. And what they say is
the
humanoids.
The evil alien capitalism of selling yes. body parts to the galaxy.
What we'll do is he's just like, when the Fast Food Alliance finally approves our thing, and humanoids will do it, and we'll take down the evil. He talks about some other like space.
They're gonna run this awesome fast food joint, and they're gonna feed people to the to members of the galaxy. I like that this whole evil plot that they put a lot of fucking work into is all hinging on the Fast Food Alliance approving their application.
This is finally climaxed by having a feast where Peter Jackson then throws up into a giant bowl just of green gloop, where then the leader then picks it up and then starts drinking it right
out
of the bowl. And then
it's getting to my second favorite line of the film.
Hit it, chair.
I got a crunchy bit.
So glad I didn't hear that. Would have taken me over the edge.
So they start passing the bowl around and everybody starts drinking it. And this, oddly enough, was actually just made out of yogurt, food coloring, and some Nasty Bits.
Oh,
so,
okay.
It was actually probably really delicious.
It's probably nothing that Dave Edwin didn't make me drink out of a trough at Coco Lane.
Yeah.
And drag, so.
The things Jeremy will do for $5.
No, I did it for free.
The promise of beer will take you anywhere.
Thank you, Dave Edwin. I want to say another shout out to Dylan Petticord, double for Baskets and Gillifinakis. So
thank you for that. Thank you. So
yeah, because he needs it.
I know. Bastard.
As they're passing it around, the bowl is getting closer and closer to Frank, who's there undercover, and it finally gets to him.
Don't do
and
it.
They look at him, and there's a pause, and you think, is it going to be a gunfight? Is he going to do it? He dives right in. Whoa. He not only takes one sip, but then he grabs it for a second sip just so they can look really good. Like, oh, it's so good.
He needs his probiotic, man.
We're coming up on my third favorite line.
Go ahead, Jer. Hit him.
He comes back into the kitchen with his fellow buddies, and they're like, "Oh, you won't believe what they made me do." And he's like, "Huh? Did they make you eat Chuck?" "Oh, yes." And the look on his face.
"Did they make you eat Chuck?"
Because he's looking through the door and watching him eat it. Yeah, and he's like,
"Yeah." I like Ozzy's face the whole time. He's like, "You're eating that, bro." Pretty good. Pretty good. So,
oh gosh,
they go to rescue the guy who's in the soup bowl, and they break him out, and they're trying to make their way out, but they are discovered, and so starts the endless gunfight that is the rest of this movie. So they start fighting in and out of the house, and there is just gunfight after gunfight. It's just constant gunfire, and it's slowly broken up by scenes of seeing Derek come back too, because now he's found a hat to hold his brains in.
Oh, thank God.
He starts a car and starts making his way over there that has a cardboard cutout of all the Beatles sitting in the front of it, so that it looks like basically Sergeant Pepper's album is driving this fucking car down the road.
With an extra top level to the car where he can actually drive.
Yeah, it's pretty wild looking car. Some of the highlights from basically this never-ending climax to the movie is Frank gets pinned down at one part by sniper fire, and he's evading bullets in a very hilarious fashion. Just there's like a minute, like a good 45 seconds where he's tumbling around the yard. It's like, and just bullets are just barely missing him constantly. And he finally sees where the snipers are, so he shoots wildly up into this tree, and then he takes cover, and then, oh man, Phantasm 2 definitely 100% stole this from Bad Taste. I mean, this is so funny. He sprays the tree, and then all of a sudden, when he's reloading, one body falls down, and then another body falls out of the tree. Five bodies fall out of the tree after he does that from one spray of bullets that fly up there.
Another special Monty Python scene is where there's a barrel sitting against a hill, and they stole that from Monty Python. It's like, "And now, how not to be seen."
Yeah.
"Only have one thing you can be..." Oh, that was a bad choice. Shoots through the barrel, and the guy just finally falls behind the barrel. He's dead.
I was thinking of Monty Python. One of my favorite sketches they ever did was about a joke that the Germans wrote that was so funny it killed people.
Yeah, S. von Schlottenmeier.
Yeah, and then like you hear a guy, like you hear, like you see British soldiers, because I think the British do it first.
Read the
and
joke.
They're like bouncing around this wooded glen, and they have a fucking like scroll paper open, and they're like reading in sync this fucking joke in German. They can't understand it, of course.
One person tried to decode the joke. He did two words in one day and had to be hospitalized.
And then you just hear like ha ha ha, and see a dummy fall out of the fucking trees in a German army suit. God, that's so great.
The next scene of merit is Ozzy when he's out on the balcony outside, and he finally gets into a fight with the butcher. And this butcher fight scene is pretty cool. He starts waving the machete at him like wildly. Ozzy actually grabs another alien and then puts it in front of him, and the butcher disembowels him in front of him, which is pretty cool.
Hell
and
yeah.
Then it ends with Ozzy basically doing a professional wrestling move of doing a back body drop, but drops him all the way off of the balcony so that he falls really, really comically, like this dummy that gets thrown off, like it splatters on the ground.
That is literally my favorite shit ever, when you can tell it's a dummy and they try to believe it so hard that it's a man. I just love that.
I will tell you that that is one of my favorite things too, Kimberly. The best people that ever did something that made me laugh. I swear to you, I've never laughed watching a movie harder than this. It was the movie Orgasmo, where there's Ron Jeremy is in the movie Orgasmo, and they're in a fight scene with Ron Jeremy, and he goes to jump kick Ron Jeremy, and then all of a sudden it's no longer Ron Jeremy's face, but a ceramic pot that is clearly fashioned in like Ron Jeremy's image, not painted or anything, and a foot goes through it and it shatters the way a clay pot would.
Oh my God.
I remember seeing that.
And
even that. It makes me laugh so fucking hard. God damn it. That's fucking, like, oh, it's one of those things where you're like,
when you like, I know somebody who smoked weed made this movie. I know it because I was really high when I watched it, and it just hit every funny motor in my brain all at once. I just couldn't even handle it. I watched it. I rewound it immediately. I was like, please write it back.
It's like in video games when you can put it on ragdoll setting.
Yeah.
And when they die, it's just so perfect.
Did you play the video game where you ride your car just to go out the windshield and to see if you can hit the dartboard at a certain spot? That was the whole game. That was the whole game. No, but your my other favorite Mighty Python is like, okay, and now for an unsuccessful salesman and the body thrown out the window, and he's like, and yeah. Now for two bodies thrown out at the same time.
Like they're
time.
Having a meeting and they see him go wow. by. God damn it.
So it goes back to Derek after this, and he's riding in his blue yellow submarine fucking Beatles car and then runs over one of the aliens that completely cuts him in half when he hits him with the car. And then Derek gets out of the car and gets his hat shot off, which lets some of his brains out, so he has to fucking tourniquet his head with a belt. And then he goes to the back to go get his special weapon, which is a red chainsaw that's hidden, ooh, hiding in the back. And he is now on his way to the house himself.
But first he kills the half guy laying on the ground. So.
I know. I think he leaves the half guy alone. He doesn't do anything to him. The half guy, though, keeps throwing rocks at him, and it keeps knocking
his
brain
a little
bit.
His face.
Yeah. So he heads back. Meanwhile, the head alien grabs a gun, and he also is pinned down at one part. Frank then unloads some ammo into there. He gets shot, and then he loses his human form and goes full alien, which is a kind of cool transformation. There's only one scene
with eye popping,
like, nah, rah, 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 like this is pretty fucking cool. The boys decide to make a run for it for the Mustang at this point. So the aliens are now full alien mode. So one other little point before we leave the house at this point is that there's so much gunfire and violence that happens here. There's definitely scenes where you can see the main characters playing zombies in like the as extras, and like there's one scene where he has a handgun, he just starts shooting them as they come around the corner. One of them is clearly Barry and Ozzy. They run around the corner. I'm like, that's clearly the main actor right there. Like that's him. And I'm like,
they're killed so quickly, you don't really notice.
We're running out of men whose wives let them do this.
So
COVID never had so many characters.
They get to the Mustang, and the aliens are able to disable the car through gunfire. So they hop out and they start hoofing it. But Ozzy says he strips down and fucking pulls off his bulletproof vest, which seems like a very poor decision to make.
Yeah.
He's just like, where you going, mate? I'm going back to fight him. And he's just like, you guys go ahead. I'm going to go back. So Ozzy goes back and pulls out the secret weapon out of the back of that Mustang,
yes,
which is a fucking RPG.
Yes. So
he goes back and the aliens go, and now they're investigating the car, and they turn on metal, which you find out is their biggest weakness, because as soon as it comes on, they're going, oh God, I can't listen to this weird New Zealand hair metal. And then Ozzy fucking loads up the RPG, shoots one right at it, and explodes that. Frank turns around, who's way on the other side of the fucking map, and turns back and goes, hey, that's my car. Like, he's very concerned that his car just got exploded. So he then leaves Barry and the other guy and says, hey, I got to go back and help him fight. You go ahead. So now Frank is going to go help Ozzy, as Ozzy's going with, he's got like two more RPG rounds. He's running back to the house. So they hop back, they go there. Ozzy then lines up the house and shoots an RPG into it and blows a giant chunk of it up, which is pretty fucking cool.
Pretty
looking.
Fucking
just
cool.
Like a good quarter of the house just explodes out
Looks
of the corner.
Like
there.
A model.
It could have been a model, but who knows? Could have been anything. So I like that they go so far as we'll get to it. They try to go back. They then decide to go in and go get the leader. So Frank is now on site. He's like, hey, buddy, don't waste that last one, because he decides to go back in and go get the leader. Meanwhile, right after that, Derek is in hot pursuit, but he has the chainsaw. And instead of using the door, he decides to start cutting his way through the wall.
Nice.
And he actually makes a perfect body shape of himself.
But not after taking out one of the aliens and cutting him almost directly in half.
No, that comes soon. That comes soon. Okay. That's one more scene away. But yeah.
Damn it!
There's fist fights with aliens. There's all types of stuff. And then when Ozzy's pinned down, Derek shows up and cuts one of the aliens through a wall in half and splits him. He's just like, oh, Derek, you're okay. He goes,
oh, dear. Derek's going ape shit.
Derek's going mad. We got to get the fuck out of here. So Derek,
which,
then,
by the way, reminded me of Willie's gone ape shit from Dawn of the Dead. So
it's also at this part where Derek decides to pick up a little bit of the brains that have fallen out of the alien's head, open up his flap in the back, and shove some of that in there.
Because
that can only work out for everybody.
I like when this movie was just like, you know, it's been about 5 minutes. You need to do something real gross again with this head flap thing, and it just constantly
it's like Silent
delivers.
Night, Deadly Night with tits.
We didn't even point out that when he fell from his thing, he was so happy that when he fell, he crushed like a couple of pigeons, a couple of seagulls. He's like, I killed them when I landed on them. So
such a sicko.
Gosh. The fake dead seagulls that he had landed on. So.
So they realize Derek is on a rampage, so they decide to flee. Frank goes back out and he fires the last RPG into the house, but it goes right past the leader. It goes right past Frank, goes all the way through the house to the other side and hits a fucking sheep.
Oh, no!
Eradicates the sheep. That was the part that I laughed the hardest in the movie.
They couldn't have done it anymore if they had had the sheep actually literally turn its head towards the camera as it's like, oh shit!
Just fucking blows up a sheep. The main alien is now fled into a control room where he starts fiddling with levers and buttons, and what you can see is that it starts retracting the lawn in there.
With a simple crank.
And he's preparing the ship for launch because the whole house is actually their spaceship because, you know...
They're aliens.
Giant conglomerate country, like international food operations that want to do this, still rely on basic timber when traveling light years over space and time. So as they're doing that, Ozzy is caught on the retractable lawn, which is funny because they had to do this so it didn't look like a model. In all the other scenes, there's like, oh, well, they had AstroTurf. That's why he's now stuck on the AstroTurf. So they luckily pull Ozzy off at the last second because he's caught a whole bunch of bullets in the legs and has been semi-incapacitated, and Ozzy and Frank sit there and watch the giant house fly off into space. But little did they know, they did not account for Derek.
Oh, shit.
The alien is sitting there and fooling with his levers, and he thinks all is good as they're floating through space. Very similar also to Doctor Who, because it's just spinning through space. It's not... It's spinning through space, clockwise motion, and he hears the sound of a chainsaw, so the guy gets up, and then all of a sudden he looks up, and Derek has cut his way through a part of the ceiling, and he goes, aha! And he jumps, swan dives down, chainsaw first, and chops him, like, basically cuts and dives all the way through, head into his asshole, and he wiggles his way out of the alien's ass.
From crown to root chakra.
And then Jerry... Derek hits him with a line. Jeremy, do you know it? Are you ready?
After he goes through the alien?
Yeah.
Up and reborn! With blood all over his face.
Well,
thank God.
One interesting fact about the chainsaw in this movie, that red chainsaw actually didn't work at all, and there was no actual blade on it. All the movement parts of the chainsaw were actually shot in different parts of the movie.
Hmm.
But that wasn't
strange one. Sorry. Yeah.
So the end of the movie, the next scene is Derek is now sitting in the control room of the spaceship, and he's like, I'm coming for you, fuckers! I'm coming for you to get you bastards!
You know, you think that Peter Jackson was a great director, but also a great actor.
Mm-hmm. He was. Great acting.
I just wonder how many people that actually meet Peter Jackson like... Hey, Derek, it's you, bloody bastard! I've been an award-winning director for many years now. Please don't mention that film.
And then it ends. The very last scene is literally the remaining four guys that made it out all riding off into the sunset as they play the song Bad Taste.
In the Sgt. Pepper Mobile. So.
In the Sgt. Pepper Mobile.
And I hate to say the only reason for you, Kim, to actually see this was to see the sheep getting exploited by an RPG. So.
I'm sorry I missed it. If I wasn't nauseous, I probably would have made
Why'd
it.
Why'd you have to have a kid and spoil your movie going experience?
Sorry.
You think that some things are more important, like having kids?
My favorite scene of what I did see was my personal favorite. Was what I call the action window roll-up scene between the bread guy and bearded Peter Jackson, where there was a struggle to get that window up. Struggle to get that window.
I think that was my biggest letdown of the movie, because when he got his arm cut, I was just like, oh, something fucking real cool is going to happen.
Yeah,
right,
he's
going to
cut
like,
his hand off.
I thought
he
was
going
to hand cut off or he runs him into something, but nothing happens. They just
nothing,
peacefully
yeah.
let him go.
And I went, oh, this is how this movie's going to go. Okay.
Yeah.
It's hard to think of a nerdier movie for a female to watch, and this was a lot for a female to watch.
Yeah. You're a
this
girl.
This is pushing the limits
don't
of estrogen.
Remind me.
Pushing the limits of estrogen that can actually handle. So
honestly, if I was not nauseous,
there's no girl in this movie at all.
No,
there's not one girl in this movie.
Just like the thing, just like the John Carpenter's The Thing. I mean, pretty much the same.
Right.
Pretty much. I can't even with
that.
And
my dinner with Andre. So.
Kimberly, what are your takeaways from Bad Taste, Peter Jackson, acclaimed movie director's first time out?
If you like trauma movies, you have to see this. If you would have described it to me before I saw it, I never would have given it a chance. I wish I wasn't so nauseous, because I would have loved to made it through to just be able to say, I made it through Peter Jackson's Bad Taste. And I assure you, people at the next Monster Mania would have been like, a girl?
What?
But I just couldn't. It wasn't a taste thing. It was just the taste in my mouth thing. It's funny. It's ridiculous. It really pushes the boundaries of how much time you're willing to waste. Because it's just, there's so many, like, as you're watching it, you're kind of like, what the fuck is happening? It doesn't really make sense. They're barely holding on to a plot line. And then something happens with somebody's brains and you're like, oh, this is why I'm watching this. Okay, I got it.
Definitely handing off the torch as Monty Python would with extreme gore and ridiculous jokes. So.
Yes, definitely.
I think the best part of this movie, I mean, it's not a great film. I'm willing to admit that. Although I do enjoy it immensely, this is the movie I hope that I can make one day. I think this is what I want to make with my friends. Like, if I got together with my friends for weekends for 4 years,
yeah,
I don't think I would make something as good as this, but it would be about the same.
Right.
Yeah, you have to admit, he had crane shots in this. He had crane shots going over cliffs.
Right.
Very, very big yeah. for what he was trying to do. So
there were some big things in it.
When you look
things.
At it that way, it's very impressive. He made the guns. They were very realistic.
Yeah.
The sounds. I mean, everything.
There's a lot of work he put into
yeah.
it. A lot of work.
I admire that.
So,
it's funny with my newly found actor named Rob Creamer is that I realize as an actor, I can do this. I just won't give him any lines. And he can actually maybe act this. So, versus these other guys, they actually acted. So.
There are lots of goofs in this movie. You can look them up. But one that's really funny is when early in the movie, there is a scene where Peter Jackson falls off. And it's implied that he loses his shoe to get off of there because the shoe's sitting there. The very next scene that you see him when he's on the side of the cliff, he's both his shoes
wearing
back
shoes.
On.
So, fuck it.
It's just
different weekend.
Different weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he got shoes on again. It's not a big deal, mate. I'm the director. You can do whatever you want. I'm also the starring actor. I am this character. So it was a fun movie. I enjoyed it. You guys should check it out if you haven't seen it. Kimberly.
Yep.
I wasn't ready. I'm sorry.
I know.
You know,
it's
I
okay.
shit the bed a little bit on that
hey,
one.
Hey, man. If you've never shit the bed, you haven't lived.
Yeah, you haven't had fun. Kimberly, where can people find you?
At Watch Me Doing This on Twitter, at Panic at the Deli on Instagram, and the Auto Bar, the second Saturday of every month in Baltimore City. It's free. Come check us out. We're going to have so much fun.
Hell yeah. I love the second Saturday shit show. I'm a big fan, and I'd like to be on it again sometime
soon. I want you to
soon.
Be on it again.
I will. 2018, it's here.
It's your year, buddy.
And you can find out the weekend that I'll be there at ericcomedy.com. Check it out there, all things Eric Comedy. Follow my adventures over in the Middle East, and hopefully I make it back okay. God bless all of you. Log on to Stitcher or iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating so we can read it on the show. Everybody have a safe and wonderful trip. We love you. Good night.
Yay!
It's funny because I actually slowed it down so it almost sounds legit. Boo. Like.